Hi, I'm Lyle Troxell.
And I'm Miles Elam.
I host the show, Miles co-hosts, and this is Rick.
Hi, Rick Philman.
And what do you do, Rick?
I answer phones for GeekSpeak.
So there's actually a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. There's power for the building. KOSP gets a lot of support from the community to run the station. And without the station, of course, we wouldn't be doing what we do. And you're a perfect example of that. You're never on air.
That's right. I'm waiting for your calls, usually.
Yeah, but whenever we take a call on air, this is the guy that everyone talks to. He's the gatekeeper, as it were.
And since we're talking to podcasters who definitely like us, because they wouldn't be subscribing to us without, they're not just driving and listening to KOSP, I can say pretty clearly that Rick also helps to get the wackos off air. So one of the things you do sometimes is take a call and you warn me about it.
Wait a second. Why are we still on air then?
That's funny.
Well, mostly the wackos are, you know, they don't usually bother us.
But we do get calls every once in a while. What's the craziest call we've gotten on for GeekSpeak?
Oh, the fellow who wanted to talk to me, and he kept talking and talking and talking about the gigantic, spaceship that hovers out over the Monterey Bay and what he was going to do about it.
What was his plan?
Something about an array of microwave ovens. To
shock it or something?
I'm not sure. But it's been there for 15 years, I believe.
It has.
Yes.
Wow. No, I've never seen it.
It's 80 miles wide and 50 miles tall.
So this is an example of one of the things you don't let get on the air, right?
That and people who are behind the wheel.
Well, no. The ship, though, like the engines, when they go off, it causes that fog in the Monterey Bay area. That's what causes it, right?
Yeah. So, Rick, thank you for doing it. How long have you been doing it? 6 years?
About three something.
Oh, really? Three?
Okay. 3 years about.
And very reliable, and thank you so much for doing it. And listen, anyway, this week's podcast, this week's GeekSpeak show is a pledge drive. And I know that you, as a podcaster, do not listen to all of KOSP, like some of us do that live in the community. We do have some other podcasts that are really good. Dr. Don's show is great if you don't podcast that. And there's a few others that are quite good as well. But in any case, the messages we're talking today on the program when we do the pledge breaks are not really for you, the podcaster, but it's totally relevant. And if you do decide to pledge by going to kosp.org, will you send me an email, lyle@geekspeak.org, that's L-Y-L-E, and just let me know you did, because the way the station works, we won't know if it is actually because of the podcast or not, and I'd like to know how many of our 2,400 subscribers are actually giving us money. So please do subscribe, and of course, send me an email with the amount you did. Again, that's lyle@geekspeak.org. And thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Just think of it as a tip jar. We'd greatly appreciate it.
And, of course, we are available for questions for people all the time, right?
You call in any Saturday in real time between, around 10:30, you get in for sure.
Yeah, and that's, of course, on Pacific time.
That's Pacific.
Right. And it's 800 number. We'd love to have podcasters call in. If you do call in as a podcaster, you know, normally this podcast, just you can listen to us live on air at kosp.org/live. And that's kind of fun to do if you're outside the broadcast area. Anyway, thanks for listening, and here's your show for October 11th, 2008. Today on GeekSpeak, the first half we're doing geek news, and in the second half, we'll be joined by Eric Tietzel from Google to speak with us about the Climate Savers Computing Initiative with the goal of making computers more efficient. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today is a pledge show. That means that you can call in any time during the show and give us some money to support the station and support the program. And I want to say that the two regular listeners to GeekSpeak have done just that. In fact, they did that last week with us. Daryl and Heather Richmond have donated $1,000 as a matching pledge. That means that every dollar you donate to KOSP during the hour of GeekSpeak will be matched dollar for dollar by Daryl and Heather Richmond. And thank you both. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, Heather, for doing that. Up to $1,000. So why don't you do that right now? Just give us a ring. The phone numbers are, the phone number is 1-888-777-1507. We'll be giving that quite a few times. I just want to let you know that GeekSpeak's worth it. At least this hour, I can speak a little bit about the dollars or time that goes into it. And that is this. Every week, I invite about three geeks on to Geek Speak, with an average of three of them actually showing up, which is kind of nice, including myself. With 52 weeks, that gives us 208 geek hours a year at an average hourly rate of, let's say, $80. Oh, wait, Miles is here. Okay, let's say $40 an hour. That's a value of $8,000. That's a value of $8,320. And then, of course, that's just the content that we produce for you every week. There's actually a lot of infrastructure that goes into making the station support and stable. And we need your support for that right now.
And with that $1,000 matching pledge from Daryl and Heather Richman, you can double your money during this hour, during Geek Speak, by just going online to kosp.org and pledging, or you can call now at 1-888-777-1507. And remember, if you call during this hour, your money is doubled. So kosp.org or 1-888-777-1507.
And we have a few thank yous.
We'd like to thank Rhea and Joseph of Ben Lomond, and also thank you because you didn't request a thank you gift, which means we get the full benefit of your pledge.
And Ryder?
And we'd like to thank Audrey of Santa Cruz for your pledge as well. Thank you very much.
All right. Make sure to stay tuned for a wonderful debate. John McCain and Barack Obama face off in their last presidential debate on domestic policy. The next president will inherit a troubled economy. Tune in as the candidates debate the woes and of Wall Street and their effect on Main Street. Join us for uninterrupted coverage of the debate, followed by an in-depth analysis. John McCain and Barack Obama debate domestic policy. Special coverage on KUSP and NPR Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning, and I'd actually like you to answer how much you get paid as I introduce you. So, Miles Elam, student programmer and political junkie, how much you get paid for Geek Speak?
Oh, I think I made double what I did last year.
Nothing. We're all volunteers. That's what I want to emphasize here today. We also have Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems. Morning, Ryder.
Good morning.
And Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance. Morning, Drew.
No longer.
That's right. What's going on with you?
I resigned yesterday, and I have a new position with Netgear starting in a couple of weeks here.
Okay, what's your cool title?
I'll be the director of product marketing for the storage group.
Sounds like a lot of fun. It's right up your alley. You've been always in the network.
It is up there.
And you guys all volunteer. Now, Drew, we don't actually have you on very often because you also run a business on the side as well, so you're very busy. So thanks for taking the time to volunteer for KOSP in the Central Coast.
My pleasure.
And, of course, for Geek Speak and, of course, the geeks in general. We also have someone behind the scenes every week, two people behind the scenes every week. Alex Slias down in Southern California joins us via text messaging. He volunteers his time. He also runs our forums, which is a support space for you online all the time. And then, of course, we also have Rick Philman, who answers the phones for us every week and pipes you in. This week, we're not taking your calls, but I do urge you to call in with donations in support of the station. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Let's go ahead and jump into the geek news. Miles, I'd like to start with you.
People have always discussed how they're going to set up their network. It used to be you laid out Cat 5 or Cat 6 and wired your computers physically. Mm-hmm. And then Wi-Fi started hitting the big scene. And then people decided, wait, that's not okay, I need to have some encryption on there. So you had WP encryption. That turned out to be not good enough, so we moved to WPA, WPA2.
I remembered every time we had to set up the configuration a little
differently. WPA, WPA2 turned out to be okay. People were...
Right.
Not anymore.
Uh-oh.
There's some Russian programmers. Global Secure Systems has heard that a Russian firm has taken the GPU from an NVIDIA video card and used that as a number cruncher, which basically that's what a GPU is.
Yeah.
And together with the main CPU, they've been able to crack WPA, WPA2 encryption in, well, let's just say 10,000% faster than it used to be.
Well, how long
Wait
does
a minute.
It take from the
Wait
crack?
A minute. I don't get what's different here. You're just throwing more processing at the problem?
Yeah. You're basically taking the only way to break it, there's no vulnerability per se of WPA, WPA2. It's just that way you get through encryption is you try this key, that doesn't work. Try the next one, this doesn't work.
Now, is this assuming that someone sitting there sniffing the network grabs a whole bunch of data and then tries this on their local data?
Exactly.
Wow. And I guess WPA doesn't have a large encryption key. It's not like 128 or something like that?
It's not a 128. It's relatively large in that it was able to prevent people from getting into it up to now. Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether it's a 48-bit or a 64-bit, but...
It seems like it'd be enough that the cracking of it's kind
not
of impressive.
Not anymore, because the computers are becoming that much faster. GPUs,
thanks a lot, NVIDIA.
The graphics cards that are out there now are... They're not general-purpose CPUs. They are optimized for large numbers and crunching them very quickly.
So go to larger keys. Now, I always tell people when you're using wireless, don't trust the network, and you actually have to use secure protocols like IMAP-S
SSH.
We won't get into that right now, but thank you very much, Miles.
But at the same time, if you're looking at doing a home network, it's no longer just the network keeping you safe. You can't assume that anymore.
Right.
And this is impossible. It's just this detente escalation phase where...
It always has been. Security has never been an on or off thing. It's kind of like when you have a deadbolt on your front door. It's like, that's going to be more secure than a standard one. But yeah, it's how much inconvenience you want to have. Do you want to have that bar that goes from the door to the floor that anchors it to keep it closed, or whether or not that's just not worth it to you?
Thank you very much, Miles. For
find a neighbor
story.
With a weaker lock. That's the way to go.
Drew, go ahead.
Well, I've got this really cool story about wind energy, because we've got this fella today coming on to talk about PC power and cooling. And in some of the data centers that I've worked with, it's been a tremendous shift in design towards designing the building to help offset the cost of the power and cooling for all the machines that run in the data center. This company in San Francisco, Windation Energy Systems, and actually they're in Menlo Park, their startup has designed a tower that attaches to the top of the building, brings in wind energy in the form of moving air, pipes it down into the building, runs a turbine, and then releases it, all without any... It's basically you're harvesting the wind energy for the building.
Cool.
So you're dealing with cooling, and you're offsetting the power problems for running the fans to pipe the air around in the first place.
Nice.
Pretty interesting.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Drew. Mr. Brooks?
I want to talk a little bit about Apple. You know, we got to talk about Apple sooner or later. They have announced that their MacBook Pro lineup, manufactured between May 2007 and September 2008 on their GeForce 8600M GPUs that are integrated in their laptops, they may actually be susceptible to the NVIDIA packaging defects that were causing hardware failures.
Okay.
And they are going to fix it for free.
Okay. So
wait, within 2 years, hardware failures.
These hardware
like?
Failures can manifest themselves as distorted or scrambled video on your computer screen, or no video at all occurring.
Miles, is that
and
why
that
you,
would be wait, my wait, laptop.
Is that why you don't have your laptop?
Do you have an Intel-based laptop with the?
Yes,
G4?
I have a laptop that was purchased in June of 2007. My laptop goes blank.
It's amazing how well
Geekspeak
can help you.
Look at that, folks. For no money at all, you can find solutions on Geekspeak.
So originally, NVIDIA said that this didn't impact Apple, and Apple has now just publicly stated, because they're just having lots of problems on the support forums, that it is indeed a problem.
All right. So we are putting that link up on the Geekspeak website right now. So just go to geekspeak.org. If you have an Intel Mac PowerBook recently, I would assume it's for the MacBook as well.
And it's not the PowerBook. It's a MacBook.
It's MacBook Pro. MacBook Pro. Okay. Yeah.
The 15 and 17 inch series.
So take a look on our website for more information on that, of course.
Which is unfortunately going to continue to kind of hurt NVIDIA here.
Yeah. Darn it, I actually chose the MacBook Pro because it had the integrated NVIDIA chipset.
Of course you did. Miles, next news story. Go for it.
Well, I talked about how encryption was failing us in the previous story. So now do a story about encryption doing something good for us. Fiber optics and quantum encryption have been something that's been on the drafting board for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to take the quantum aspects of a quantum uncertainty associated with photons going through a medium to determine whether or not it's been eavesdropped on, and also to be able to tell to be able to use it as a seed for your encryption protocol to find out, like, is that data, if the data's been tampered with, it won't decrypt.
Right.
Basically. After going back and forth. Well, this group in Vienna have actually got a network working based upon this unbreakable quantum encryption.
Now, to be clear, it's not exactly unbreakable. It's detectable when it is broken. So...
Right.
Oh, but then as soon as you interrupt the signal and you know it's not happening, you stop the signal. So
right.
Okay, go on.
But someone in the middle cannot decrypt that that conversation.
Right.
You can always interrupt a conversation. You can, you know. But yes.
Okay.
But what was interesting about this is that, one, they were using off-the-shelf fiber optic cable.
Okay.
They were not using anything special. And they were using multiple techniques for this quantum encryption at the same time. So one leg would be using one style and another leg would be using another style. And it was all working together.
That's
so
very
cool. Real-world example, which means that we're getting very close to this hitting actual commercial market.
Do you need a quantum computer to do these?
No, but you need a quantum network adapter.
I got four of those.
If that makes any sense, something that can actually
send. It doesn't, Miles. Thank you very much.
A network card that can actually send these signals, that actually can do a fiber optic signal.
Hey, I want to mention that we are in a pledge drive right now, and the outcome of a pledge drive is always in question. It only works when it works, meaning that it only works when you call to donate. And the goal, sometimes we don't meet it, and that hurts a lot. And sometimes a very modest contribution really helps us out. It moves us forward, especially right now when Daryl and Heather Richmond have put up $1,000 as matching grant for Geek Speak Hour. Your pledge really helps us pull in money. A couple of pledges may pay for that broken transmitter or the staff person who spent staying up all night fixing something. There's a lot of work that goes on here, and your money really helps us out.
Now, if you call now, you can become a new KUSP member. At the same time, what you're getting here is a dialogue with us, which is shared over the air for free. It's public radio. You aren't going to get that kind of dialogue for free if you go to a computer shop, local computer shop. They're going to charge you for any advice, or maybe not necessarily for advice, but they will give you for working on the computer, looking at it, trying to troubleshoot your problems. Like GeekSpeak on KUSP, computer shops have to pay their bills, but they also have to pay the technicians a good hourly wage. You know, and here we are, suckers with experience. I mean, technicians with experience. We're volunteering our time and with your help paying the station's bills. And we're able to keep the services, the station, we're able to keep those services going that keep the station going as well, keeps the station healthy.
That's right. And we're able to do that with your support and only with your support. So please, right now, give us a call or go online and donate some money to the station, to GeekSpeak, and to everything we do at the station. There is a matching grant of $1,000, which means every dollar up to $1,000 that you donate will get matched by Daryl and Heather Richmond, which we appreciate very much. Visit online at kusp.org. Again, that's kusp.org. The org stands for organization, meaning it's a nonprofit. And that means it's tax-deductible donations, of course. The phone number is 1-888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. For your first time supporting of the station, I recommend going for $80. It's a pledge drive amount of $80, gives you a member card. It's membership to the station. The member card also gives you a whole bunch of half-off dining advantages in the Central Coast area. Really great feature, especially for taking a look at new spaces around. If you like going out, I highly recommend that. And the feeling of knowing that you're supporting something that you believe in is a really wonderful feeling. I can't stress that enough. So $80 is a great thing to donate right now. Again, 888-777-1507, 888-777-1507, or right now, of course, on kusp.org. Next news story. I think it's Drew's turn.
I've got a pretty exciting one here that I saw earlier this week. It's about Ubuntu, which you guys know I'm a pretty good fan of, thanks to Miles turning me on.
I always like to turn you on.
Well...
Family programming.
That's right.
Here at KUSP.
Geeks in their natural environment. Businesses are catching on to Ubuntu, and it's being demonstrated here by this week's announcement that a company called Gameloft, which is not just nobody, this is a 4,000-person company traded on a public exchange in Europe, has adopted half of the company with Ubuntu desktops for doing QA work, quality assurance work. So in my mind, that's a pretty interesting representation of the upswing or the uptick in acceptance for an open source operating system that's functional in a business environment, as well as for enthusiasts and, you know, Linux geeks.
Right. They weren't the only big player that switched over to Ubuntu.
I think India has adopted some tremendously high numbers, but because this is such a large company with a real business focus, I thought that was newsworthy.
I was actually thinking about Wikimedia. Wikipedia used to be a hodgepodge of different technologies. They are now standardizing all on Ubuntu.
For servers or desktops?
For servers.
Ah.
All right.
Linux in the server room is not as uncommon.
But. Yo, Linux and Ubuntu.
But Ubuntu in the server room, especially, they're moving it to just a complete contract. They're homogenous Ubuntu.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Every 6 months like clockwork, and they're on track for this for October here to release 8.1.
Or 8.10.
8.8.10, which is the next release. So if you haven't tried it out yet, I strongly encourage
you. You can get a live CD by going to Ubuntu.org. And,
it's for free, of course.
Yeah, you download it, you burn it, and then you can test it out without actually affecting your computer. Really, really cool experience. Ryder, next news story, please.
Mozilla Labs, a little side project of Mozilla that works on experimental projects and upcoming beta technologies, has introduced on Tuesday an extension called Geode, which is a geolocation service. Very similar to what Apple does with its iPhone and their iTouch technologies, where you can, using your wireless chip on your laptop, you can get your approximate location using Skyhook service. So they've implemented this technology. It's going to go into new browsers. I believe it's going to go into the Firefox 3.1 beta browser built-in.
How does it work exactly? It looks at your IP and kind of guesstimates?
I'm a little fuzzy on it, and I'll explain why. Basically, right now they use one service provider called Skyhook, which uses, I believe, a triangulation of nearby networks, wireless networks around what your laptop can detect. And then they have a cache of information that they apparently don't keep personal records and whatnot for privacy purposes. But it's supposed to give you pretty close approximation, you know, sometimes down to the street level. Within a few seconds, so actually much quicker than a GPS signal, but sometimes not as accurate.
Yeah,
sounds a lot like what we have for the iPhone.
It's exactly Skyhook is what is used for the iPhone, but you know, with iPhone with the new series, you also have the GPS locator as well.
Right.
So I played with it. You can install it on the current version of Firefox as an extension, and they have a couple of demo pages. It was a little weird. I hooked it up first time I did it. I kind of said, okay, what happens if I don't have my wireless turned on? Will it do anything? You know, nothing, right? It complained about it. So I turned it on, and it pops up my location where I lived a year ago.
Why did it do that?
I don't know. The only thing that I know is that my wireless router was at my old house a year ago, so maybe Skyhook somehow had some cache information.
You didn't take your static IP with you, did you?
No. I'm on Comcast. I used to be on DSL with AT&T before. So no, I'm not quite sure, and I refreshed it a couple of times, and then it found my new location, but then I tried it again later, and it would, like, every third time, it would go back to where I lived a year ago. It was very weird.
So it's using cookies or something else. It's taking a look at something else in your system to figure out
where
you live.
But I turned off the wireless, and it couldn't find me. So.
You're right. It must be about the MAC address or something on your DSL modem. You have the same modem.
Yeah.
But how would someone on the far end know about your MAC address?
Oh, no. It's done by phone number. So it probably knows where your phone number was last registered. You kept the same phone number when you moved?
Yeah, but it's not associated with my Comcast
it's
cable.
It's connected with your DSL, sure. Oh, but, Comcast cable. Comcast.
Yeah, I went from two different providers. Yeah, very weird.
Something does not add up.
Some MAC address.
I love when geeks are confused.
Yeah, but it had me up a little bit last night, going, "Why is it doing this?" But anyway, it was very accurate though in terms of where it found me. It was
just
like,
wasn't temporally active.
Yes, accurate. Exactly.
You are here right now. Oh, and 3 years ago you were over here.
Yeah. So there are privacy concerns, but you can you can select what level of granularity you want them to be able to say where you are, whether it's exact location, neighborhood, city, or nothing at all.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that add-on about geo-syncing kind of stuff on Firefox. That link is now up on the GeekSpeak website, as we do live during the show, updating it. Miles, last news story, sir, for today.
It's been normal for the phone companies to charge us for SMS messages. When we send a message, we have to pay however much it is.
That's texting on your cell phone.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes out to maybe like 5-10 cents a message. It depends upon the plan you have. Receiving, you also have to pay that amount again for it. Verizon decided that wasn't enough. They want a third option.
Oh, no.
So now if you are sending a message to a mobile phone, or rather to a Verizon phone.
Yeah.
You are going to be charged an extra 3 cents for that, for the privilege of sending to that mobile phone. So there are times when you'll want to send a message and you'll send it to some competition that's going on, saying, like, go to this message and put in this key code. But now, if you want to send to someone who's a mobile user, yeah, you pay an extra 3 cents over and above your usage costs.
When did they do this? Why did they do this? That's ridiculous.
They're looking at instituting this. This is going to be a recent change. And why they're doing this is, are you really that naive?
No, no. What I'm saying is that is never – that's never going to fly. It doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense, especially as you get smarter and smarter phones and start using other things like tech – like, you know, instant messaging on the phone where it doesn't – it uses the internet instead.
Ah, but you see, Verizon doesn't have instant messaging.
That sounds just like, I mean, come on.
Verizon makes sure their phones only
okay,
do a
Drew,
certain
you're a product
things.
Manager. Why would you ever do this?
The economy of scale. 3 cents, people think, just like Apple, it's why the iTunes store is successful. 3 cents here and there, big deal. You look at your bill at the end of the month. Oh, gee, I guess I'm going to pay Verizon quite a bit of margin.
Yeah, but won't that kill them in three or four months? Or are they looking to boost
three
up
or four
their...
Who cares about a 3 cent text message when you pay 99 cents for a song because it's been wildly
yeah, but
successful?
It's not 3 cents. It's like 43 cents.
People
well,
don't
that's
do
the thing.
You
is
guys,
a lot
we're,
of people
we're geeks. We're, people don't do the math when they sit down to type the text. They just do it.
Don't just pay your phone bill. Figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, it would make much better sense if they just integrated that into their outgoing standard.
I mean, this is also over and above the fact that text messaging is ridiculously expensive for what they're providing.
Yeah, no, like, okay, wait a second, Miles.
And unreliable.
Does this mean that if I'm on the AT&T network and I happen to send a text message to a Verizon person, I could get billed for it of 3 cents?
I'm not so sure about that. I have to do more research on this.
Because the infrastructure is in place for that kind of thing to happen. You can get reverse charges like that. If that's what we're talking about, this is a serious issue. For even
I'll,
me.
Wait, I'll look know, it up and we'll I want to start find out.
Why does it seem to you guys that you're entitled to send text messages for free on a network that was built with someone else's capital and you pay the bare minimum possible to
you? About it, at least for me, I think about it in terms of data. How much data is required to transmit someone's voice back and forth?
Right.
And so I was working that out
absolutely.
And going like, okay, like
no, it's not about the amount of data. It's about the capacity.
It so is.
It's about the capacity to transfer the data.
But
you
that's
have to
what
buy
we're talking,
that.
But that's what we're
about.
Talking about.
So
if Miles no, exactly, the switches, the
no, Drew,
the
but what
desktop.
We're talking about is if we're using our cell phone and we're calling each other and I've got hundreds of minutes and I can call freely on the same network, no problem, which I think Verizon has as well. And then I send a text message, which comparatively is nothing compared to a voice conversation.
Oh, no,
right,
no.
For the data perspective.
I understand. It's all about marketing and
positioning. It doesn't have those same latency issues.
Right, and so
as
you
well.
Can slow it down. It's totally free.
But you're not paying the true rate of the price of the infrastructure to do the voice talking in the first place.
This helps pay for that. I agree with that. I get that.
Which is why our service sucks so badly in the United States.
Thank you so much.
Geeks right speak. Then, and the opinions on GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP.
GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Of course, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks today are Ryder Brooks, Drew Meyer, and Miles Elam. We are
Maybe I'm a little bitter. I just got back from Europe where I switched. I'm sitting on the train flying along, you know, in Europe on a high-speed train going over the Alps from Italy to Switzerland, and I look down at my phone and it chirps and it switches from the Italian phone network to the Swiss phone network with nary an interruption in service. You know, wow. I can't even drive over 17 in a automobile.
We're doing a pledge drive show today, and we're asking for your support. You can give us what you think is fair. Many people choose $10 a month. We can bill you 10 monthly like that, or you can do it all in one lump sum, $120. Call us right now, 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. And Sabrina Eastwood sitting here on the phone ready to take your call. She says, thumbs up, all is ready. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Hey, and coming up in 30 minutes, we are going to be tuning on to Car Talk. In just a second, we're going to have our guest, Eric Tietzel, all about energy management for computers. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Dr. Don Motika and OptimageHealth.com in Santa Cruz, offering specialized testing, nutritional therapy, and medical management to prevent serious health effects following weight loss surgery. Appointments at OptimageHealth.com. Our guest, Eric Tietzel, is now joining us via his cell phone, I believe. Eric, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Eric is the Green Energy Manager for Google's REC Research and Development Team. Mr. Tietzel is also a contributing member of the Climate Savers Computing Initiative, a nonprofit group of corporations, NGOs, government entities, and individuals working to increase the energy efficiency of computer systems. Eric, thank you so much for taking your time today to talk to us about energy efficiency.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me on the show.
So what's this green energy management thing at Google?
Green energy management at Google. Yeah, so I'm a program manager here at Google, and my responsibility is to work on the RE less than C program. I don't know if you guys have heard about it, but if you're interested in alternative energy, we're focusing on trying to make it cost competitive with coal. So the actual equation that we've defined, which is the title of our group, is RE, renewable energy, less than C, and that C is coal.
Gotcha.
So the idea there is to try to use economics to win rather than trying to do feed-in tariffs and other, you know, sort of we would call government programs that are subsidizing.
And the general consensus right now is that most of the electrical energy in the United States is generated via coal burning, which is a very bad way to deal with.
If you divide it up, you would see here in the U.S., you know, coal-fired power plants, I think, are a little over 53% of our total electricity production. Unfortunately, it's the most carbon-intense source of fuel that we can be using for electricity. You know, here at Google, obviously, we are very big into computers and using the Internet, and that requires a fair amount of electricity. And so what we are trying to do is figure out how can we power our data centers using cleaner sources of electricity. And so that's really why we set out to try to focus on RE less than C. I think you've seen a lot of, you know, noise here at Google trying to get not just ourselves but, you know, other companies, the governments, even nonprofits to be focusing on trying to accelerate what we would call the cost life cycle of renewable energy technologies.
Before you go on, I'm actually curious about when you have that that pseudo equation.
Yeah.
There, are you also counting in the effects, the cost effects from, you know, CO2 emissions from coal plants, or is this just about the amount of power or amount the price that we have at the pump, as it were, when people are having to pay for their electricity?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We actually call it, so cents per kilowatt hour, I think, is probably the best metric that you can use. And right now, we are not factoring in any sort of whatever you want to call carbon tax that may or may not be rolled out here in the U.S. and in Europe over the next couple of years. The reason why we did RE less than C was because the emerging markets, China, India, Southeast Asia, even parts of Africa, as they start to come online and have an appetite for electricity, they're going to do whatever is least expensive for them. And right now, for most of those places, the least expensive option is coal. And it's going to be that way for a very long time, right? As they start to come online, they're going to find their cheapest source of electricity. And even if in the Western states that are currently developed, the U.S., Western Europe, even if we are close with RE, we could probably see a significant shift in our mix. But that leaves all of the very large developing nations where actually most of the emissions are going to be coming from, or at least that's what's forecasted to be in the next, you know, 15 to 20 years. We're going to be avoiding that, or we will be not able to address that. And so that's why it's really important for us to get an economic solution to power generation from what we would call non-fossil fuel sources.
So if the question is about, it's not about the emotion of protecting the planet or changing the behavior around carbon, it's about the economic benefits of shifting the infrastructure away from coal and to renewables. How do you guys impact that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, in full disclosure, I think a lot of the people that work on it really are genuinely interested in trying to figure out what we can do to sort of stem the tide of, you know, of very large amounts of CO2 and other greenhouse gases from being emitted. So clearly that is, you know, something that Google's concerned about, and, you know, we've pledged to be what we're calling a carbon neutral company, and that's something that we plan to continue in the future. In terms of how do you shift the power mix, it's very, very complicated, right? And actually, quite frankly, getting renewable energy to be cost competitive with coal, that's the first step. You also have to address a lot of intermittency issues. You have to address capacity factors. You have to address, you know, just what we would call surface area issues, right? If you're talking about photovoltaics or solar thermal, you're talking huge amounts of surface area that need to be covered to generate the type of, you know, the magnitude of electricity that we use here in the United States, and same with the developing nations, as they're going to start, you know, requiring higher and higher levels of power per capita. You're going to see, you know, increasing amounts of just land area that needs to be allocated to power generation. So, you know, there's a lot of issues to it. I think that climate change is certainly something that we are interested in trying to address. And but quite frankly, I think if you look at Google and Google's business, we depend on the fact that people can have access to the Internet. We depend on the fact that computers are going to be better and better, faster and more capable. And we believe that if, you know, electricity prices start to increase and follow sort of what had happened with the price of oil, what you're going to see is that it's going to potentially impact our ability to reach our users, and that's a very serious problem. So that's why we're spending resources trying to figure out what we can do to make lots of very cheap, clean electricity.
Okay, what's your best looking thing so far?
That's a good question. I think what we've announced externally. Just to back up a little bit. So what I do is I actually manage the team that does research and development. So we've actually got engineers here in-house that are very, very smart, extremely, you could say, creative. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at technologies, and I can't talk about those that we're working on internally. But externally, we sort of have come out, and we think there's three big buckets. One, wind already today in some locations is cost competitive with coal in the U.S.
Right.
That's very dependent on your location. Mm. But we think that there's things that you can do to wind technology to make it a lot more cost-effective, and also addressing kind of wind's big problem is capacity factor, so helping to address that as well. The second piece is solar thermal. So rather than photovoltaics, which convert sunlight directly into electricity, we like actually collecting heat. And So the analogy we use is, just magnifying heat from the sun onto a point and generating electricity from that. Traditionally, it's used to either heat water or molten salt. It drives, a standard Rankine cycle that it will actually generate electricity.
Very similar how a coal plant works, just that instead of your heat being burning coal, your heat is coming from the sun.
That's exactly right.
Yep. And is that better than photovoltaic electrical generation?
It really depends on what your objectives are. I think for Google, what we're looking for is at scale, so very big deployments.
Right.
Solar thermal doesn't work all that great for electricity generation in a distributed fashion.
Uh-huh.
It's fantastic for water heating, right? So I'm actually a little perplexed why California on all of our roofs we don't have solar thermal water heaters.
Right.
It's economic. It's fantastic, and it's it's something I think that if you're concerned about the environment, you should go investigate. But it's definitely right now what we think it has a higher probability to reach the what we would call the cents per kilowatt hour that's competitive with coal.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. has huge amounts of very good what we would call solar thermal resources. Same with the western part of China, huge amounts of resources, and northern Africa as well. So if you start looking at places where you can use land that is currently not usable for other things, such as agriculture, it's a very compelling thing to do. Photovoltaics also, I think that if you look at the nanosolars of the world and some of the other folks that are working on thin film development, they're already making some pretty interesting progress there. So Google doesn't think that our efforts in that area are going to be as impactful, simply due to solar thermal just doesn't have the same kind of backing.
Just for our audience, could you explain thin film?
Thin film, sure. So rather than using silicon, which are standard, standard solar panels.
On glass,
right. Well, even thin film can be on glass if you want it to be. And there's actually some virtue to using glass simply due to the fact that it's a non-permeable barrier to the elements.
Right.
And where you're deploying these panels are out under the sun and in the wind, and it's exposed to a lot of corrosive elements. But basically, thin film is a new process where you actually can get material that does the exact same type of process where you can convert light directly into electricity. But rather than having to grow silicon cells, you're actually sputtering or spraying on this thin film onto a substrate and using that instead. So the idea there, it's a lot cheaper from a cost perspective, and it's far less energy intense to grow crystals. It actually requires a fair amount of energy, and it also requires a lot of capital to be able to grow them properly.
So you're not inside really doing a lot of work in thin film because so many other people are, and therefore you're trying to take a market that's not being developed a lot, and that's why one of the reasons you're going to
that's exactly it, right?
Right.
We want to focus where we think we can. What we want to do is, accelerate the innovation. Right? And that's why we're getting involved. That's why, we're making a lot of noise around it. That's why we're investing a fair amount of money. I think Google, we see our role as to be catalysts in getting that change to happen a lot quicker. And you're exactly right. If you look at thin film, there's a lot of very large companies that have a lot of expertise in this that are already doing that. So
I have one, there's kind of a fundamental question backing up a little bit. You said Western China, Western United States, and Northern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
two of those three locations don't have the infrastructure to distribute the electricity once you heat the energy and generate it, capture the solar energy. So that's kind of a big problem, right? That's whereas right. With thin film or solar, you could just generate it locally and consume it locally.
Yeah, and I mean, quite frankly, even southwestern U.S., right, you're going to run into distribution and transmission problems. So that's actually a very big issue. What's interesting is China's grid is really fragile. So is India's. And
so is the northeastern United States.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, ours is antiquated and without question. So part of what you're going to see Google doing is trying to influence others to really step up and start solving the transmission problems. And we may actually dabble in what we would call some smart grid technologies, but what you're talking about is piping, the actual energy to the use centers, and that's a real problem. But, we start looking at what's happened with the petroleum industry, right? If you start seeing what Russia has built in terms of pipeline for, shipping actual fluid from, one region to the next, or compressed gas from one region to the next, those infrastructure problems can be solved. It's just, how much will and how much money a government is willing to invest in that.
Eric, I heard a thing from Google, maybe it was that backdoor, maybe you can't talk about it, but the idea of putting, I think we covered it on the show, putting server farms, which is a lot of course, Google's expense in electrical is keeping server farms cool, uh-huh. Putting them out on, old ships off the coast?
The floating barges and using wave power to power them. Yes, I think the New York Times actually picked that up.
Yeah.
It was a patent that we had filed for it. It's a really interesting idea, right? I mean, you guys know better than most in terms of what goes into, operating a data center economically. And, we do use a lot of electricity in our data centers. Fortunately, not as much as most other data centers. We just recently announced sort of the efficiency of our data centers and some of the work that we did to really make that happen. The ship idea is a very interesting one. It was funny because I think the immediate critique is, are we trying to put them in international waters to avoid, tax penalties and stuff like that? Right now, it's really tough to get fiber out to those types of deployments. And I think that we've done a pretty good job of just being able to do terrestrial-based data centers at a very, very high level of efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Will you be buying land in North Africa for your next data center?
Well, you guys know that too, right? So location and proximity to your users is really important for Google, right? So it's funny, the amount of effort that we spend just trying to eke out, milliseconds worth of performance is huge. And so you can't actually deploy these in very remote locations simply due to the fact that you're going to be sacrificing power for it. So where we site our data centers, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But certainly having access to load centers is very, very important for us.
We're going to continue our discussion with Eric Tietzel from Google all about efficient computing and using other alternative sources in the computing industry in just a minute.
This is all great to hear. I mean, this hearing about different techniques in the geeky realm to where we can go, and especially now that we have all this news about the economy and having to find ways to alternative ways of dealing with our problems, alternative ways of saving power, saving money, using our resources more wisely. And that's really why we're here. This is why we do Geek Speak every week. This is why we do, this is why we talk about efficient computing. And this is about not just talking about the problems. This is about talking about solutions. This is about bringing the community together to actually bring us forward and get us to where we need to go, mm-hmm. despite the obstacles, despite any economic news that might be happening now. To talk about, well, if I have a electrical bill that's a certain amount, then how do I lower that bill? One of those ways is dealing with your computer, mm-hmm. Being able to talk about things like S3 suspend mode, or to talk about where am I getting my power from and not being dependent upon that coal power.
And I'm going to say that, and to continue on with that, the idea of where we are now in such an industrial world is this attribute of humans where we grow, 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 and we really use technology effectively. It kind of defines our species. And one of the things we don't always do effectively is really understand how our technology is affecting our world. And that's one of the services that GeekSpeak brings to you every week. We digest it from a technical perspective, and we give it back to you in a level that you can understand, so that you understand better how technology is affecting your world. And I personally, I listen to KSP all the time. I love the station. I've been involved since a child in this station. The stuff that we bring, what the station brings to us, these amazing storytellings, it connects me to the community with reports, like when the fire situations happened. I was on the station, listening to the station all the time, and sometimes even, telling telling the, calling the station, telling them where the where I see smoke. You know, that, that local connection which public radio can give you is really a wonderful thing. I also listened to Sabrina Eastwood's calendar of performance events in Santa Cruz. And I mentioned Sabrina because she's sitting here volunteering her Saturday, not even on air, which she does all the time, of course. You as a listener, you know that what she does. She's here at the phone. She's waiting, and she's actually on the phone one. So if you call right now, you could talk to Sabrina. The phone number is 888-777-1507. So far, we've had 6 gifts for the hour of Geek Speak, and we're 75% done with that hour. So we need to step it up because Don is beating us. So right now, what I want to do is I want to invite you, if you've never called into the station, if you've never donated, to become a new subscriber and a new member of the station. All you have to do is give us a call at 888-777-1507. I know it seems a little strange to give away money for something you can theoretically get for free, but it's about being a part of your community. So the phone number again is 888-777-1507. Please give us a call right now. And of course, your dollars are matched dollar for dollar by Daryl and Heather Richmond. That's still standing. I'd like to see 4 calls right now at the $80 level. So you've heard my voice before. You've heard me for over 8 years volunteering my time every week to do this show. Please call us right now to support the station. 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. There's one. I'd like 2 more. If you could please give us a call. Again, 888-777-1507. And if you're geeky and you're on your computer right now, go ahead and visit the website, kusp.org. Let's go on with Eric. Eric, can you tell me a little bit about the Climate Savers Initiative?
Sure. Climate Savers Computing, actually, is the official title of it. And, I mean, really, it started about a year ago, actually a little over a year and a half ago, where the idea there is to try to focus on efficiency and power efficiency. And it's funny, we got kind of wrapped up in talking about renewable energy sources, and quite frankly, it's very fun and interesting to talk about those as it's emerging technology. But if you really are concerned about power consumption, if you're concerned about climate change, and if you're concerned about waste, the first thing anybody should do is focus on efficiency. And in fact, I think it was a week and a half ago, Google came out and announced, you know, that we've got the most efficient data centers in the world. And it didn't get picked up much. And it basically, we came out and we said, we use half the electricity of a typical data center does, you know, to do the things that we do.
How do you do that?
On the website, there's a bunch of details. But basically what we do is we focus on 3 major areas. One is what we would call, you know, the cooling infrastructure, so thermal management. Make sure you're doing that intelligently. The second is what we're talking about is backup power. So your UPSs, there's better solutions that you can use there. And the third is just power distribution. Anytime you convert power, you're going to have some losses. Mm-hmm. And the same is true in your actual computer. So if you look at Climate Savers Computing, what that actual program focuses on is trying to increase what we would call power conversion efficiency. I don't know how many people know, but you know, when you look at a power supply in your computer or even the external brick on your laptop, it gets hot. And what that heat comes from is basically electricity that is wasted in the conversion process from AC to DC, and both in your computer as well as in the brick inside of your laptop's power cord. So the idea there, so we focus on those three things in our data centers. And there wasn't a whole lot of play, but had we come out and we said that half of the energy of our wasteful data centers are powered by, say, solar thermal technology, it would have been front page news for a lot of the main.
So what you're saying is there's a lot of ideas of the source being really clean, but the real problem right now is we're not even using the dirty power that we're using. We're not even using that efficiently. And if we kept that way down, that's an easier way. And that's like the turn off your lights, make sure to buy efficient refrigerators, things of that nature, basically keeping an idea on how much power you're using. And so this initiative is all about designing the computer so that it can be smart and not waste as much energy.
That's exactly it, right? And so, I mean, it's funny because efficiency is very hard for people to get excited about, yet it typically has a positive return on investment. It's typically the most cost-effective thing you could possibly do to reduce your carbon footprint. So from that standpoint, that's why we created Climate Savers Computing. There's kind of 2 main thrusts for it. So number one, right, let's eradicate inefficient computers. I mean, that's step one. There's no reason computers should waste the amount of power that they waste today. So step one for Climate Savers Computing is let's fix that. The second piece is, can we instill better behaviors in users when it comes to actually the use of their computer? And so what we'd like to talk about there is many people, you just mentioned it, right, in their homes, they can leave lights on in rooms that they're not in. The computer's the same way. People will turn on the computer and their monitor. They'll leave it on. They'll walk away. They'll do something else. They'll leave the house. They'll come back. And all the while, that computer, even in an idle state, is probably consuming anywhere from 60 to 100 watts if it's, you know, a desktop with a monitor. And so the idea there is, rather than waste that type of electricity, we'll take advantage of some of the intelligence that's already built into your computer. I heard somebody when you guys went to the pledge break talk about the S3 state. You know, power management is functionality that's already built into your computer. It will automatically detect whether or not you're actually giving it signals. So if the computer detects after, you know, a period of, say, 10, 15 minutes that you're not, you know, using the keyboard or moving the mouse, then the computer says, why don't I put myself into a lower power state so that I'm not drawing a lot of power?
Right.
And that's, you know, it's built into just about every computer that you would buy today.
And you're seeing in the settings, like on a Mac, I know there's the energy saving settings, a good name for it. It's putting your hard drive to sleep and it's not active. It's putting your monitor to sleep. It's actually putting your computer to sleep.
Exactly.
And those are the language that we talk about when we're talking about making sure your machine's not wasting cycles.
Yep.
There's also, I've noticed a whole bunch of stuff. We've been seeing more of this idea of smart power supplies, so that your computer would give feedback to the power supply saying, I need more power or less power because of a certain calculation I'm about to do.
Absolutely. And there's smart power supplies. There's also throttling of the CPU, right? So the CPU is actually, and a lot of this comes out of laptop technology where battery life's really, really a very important feature, right? People want their laptops to operate as long as possible without plugging them in. And so what they've designed is computers actually to be really power efficient from a laptop perspective. What we're seeing now is a lot of that technology is trickling over into the desktops because it's cheap enough to go into them. So there's a lot of very nice things that your computer can do to be whatever you want to call frugal with its energy source. And climate savers computing is really advocating that. So there's kind of just the two things. Number one, we're asking people to go out there and when they use their computer, be sure they go in, understand their power management settings, set them to an appropriate level of aggressiveness, right? So put the computer to sleep after a certain amount of time. And then the second time is when you go to buy a new computer, make sure that you select one that's power efficient. And this is sort of the demand side of things, right? Showing the manufacturers that, in fact, you know, we, the consumer, we want to be able to choose, you know, a very power efficient system.
Miles, you have a question?
Well, there's also the aspect of dispelling myths. There are still people out there that believe that you should keep your computer running because turning it off and turning it back on again is going to be too much stress for the more stress for the components.
Right.
When in fact the reality is, if you're done for the day, turn your computer off and turn it back on in the morning when you're going to use it again.
It'll be obsolete before you wear it out.
Which is absolutely very
that
true.
Aspect too, but also components aren't made like they were 20 years ago. That they have no problem with you turning them off.
Right, you can shut down, just do it effectively through the software.
I think it's also a side effect of the power management facilities is that these components have been made to be turned off.
That's absolutely right. And actually, sometimes it's even better for your computer to flush caches and stuff like that to turn it off occasionally. And people don't understand that, so they wonder why their computer is, you know, running slow and sort of whatever you want to call. Good computer hygiene actually does include turning it off occasionally, and why not do it, I think, Miles, to your point, right, every night.
Eric, I want to ask you to think about this question for just a second. I'm going to ask you in a second, and that is, what are you most excited about the initiatives you're doing? What's looking best for you right now in this arena? And just think about that for just a second. Can we do some thank yous?
Sure. We'd like to thank Kevin from Santa Cruz, who called in while he was driving over Highway 17, and his call went through. Ha ha.
And I want to say right now that we only need 3 more $80 pledges right now. That means 3 more people to call in to donate $80, and we have matched the grant from Daryl and Heather Richmond for this hour of Geek Speak. That means if you pick up the phone right now and donate some money to KUSP, we could match that $1,000 grant, doubling your money. So please do that. The numbers are 888-777-1507. Drew Moore? Quickly.
Richard from Watsonville, who enjoys the change of format, liking the talk format. People can listen to music anytime on the web.
Great.
Lauren in Los Gatos, who says it's a refreshing change and loves listening to, usually listens to KQED in Los Gatos, the repeater station over there.
And is now listening to us, I guess. Go on.
And Susan in Salinas. And thank you very much, Susan.
Thank you so much for donating. Okay, so Eric, what are you most excited about on the initiatives you're doing?
Yeah, so for climate savers computing, I think the thing that's most inspiring to me is a bunch of what we would call competitors or adversaries from a corporate standpoint got together to say, you know, enough is enough, let's advance our industry. And, you know, so if you look at the board of directors for climate savers computing, you have Dell and HP, and you have Lenovo, all of which are competing for PC market share, and that's a really, you know, cutthroat industry.
Yeah.
And you've got Microsoft and Google, right, sitting on the board. You've got AMD and Intel that are both part of climate savers computing. And so the idea there is, right, adversaries can come together and say, you know what, together we can make this better, right? And so I think that that model in itself is inspiring to me. And it's not just our industry, right? So I'm thankful that, you know, that all of the people in the computing industry are really making a push to try to make both our products and our services more power efficient. The same can be true for any industry.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you so much. Eric Tietzel holds a BS in Mechanical Engineering from the University of California, Davis, and an MS in Mechanical Engineering from Stanford University. Eric is the Green Energy Manager for Google's RE is less than C, that's less than carbon, research and development team. Eric, thank you so much for spending your time with us today.
Thank you, guys.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak on QSP is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Drew Meyer. Thank you guys for being
here.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Got to get home and put the solar panels back on the roof.
All right on. Yeah, sorry, you just did a remodel, so congratulations on that. GeekSpeak on QSP is supported by Borrego Solar, offering photovoltaic solutions to enable homes and businesses to be green and resource savvy with Sharp solar panels. Borrego has 28 years of experience and a local team ready to help. Information at B-O-R-R-E. Go Solar. That's B-O-R-R-E, GoSolar.com. Thank you, Borrego, for doing that. And thank you all for participating in our Blanche. We just need two more people to donate $80 right now to match that pledge. So please do give us a call right now to support KUSP and GeekSpeak. That's 888-777-1507. I'm Lyle Troxell for KUSP.